Of the Pack Lacey, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Card.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Well, hello everyone and welcome to the first full off-season show. This is the pilot. I'm calling it the pilot. Full off-season show of Pulse of the Pack. I am Jacob Westendorf here. It is almost 40 degrees here in the middle of January. I had baseball practice start for my team on Saturday. So I'm getting into the swing of spring, even if it's not that close. It's a nice feeling to have. Here, it is Monday afternoon, January the 25th. I'm your host, Jacob Westendorf, and joined with me, as always, is Jason Perrone, who self-described just shoveled the back 40. So, Jason, how was your first shoveling experience?
Well, it was far from my first one. I mean, I grew up here, and it's been a long time since I've been back. I try to get one or two in every time I visit during the winter, even when I was living in the Phoenix area, just to keep the muscle memory alive. So it was good. This was easy. This was just the back little porch area. We're expecting a little more of the sugar, as they say, in the snowboarding industry. So overnight tonight, so had to get ready for that. But doing good, rocking and rolling. You know what's really cool about this whole thing, Jacob? Like I was telling you before we came on, you know, in Phoenix, and this is going to sound like a complete justification. It's a complete, you know, me just trying to make it sound better than it really is. It's rationalization. But in the Midwest, it's drier out there, and so you get a little bit of wind, and it's cool. You know, in the winter, it gets down into the 40s, and sometimes into the high 30s overnight. You add a little bit of that dry wind in there, it actually stings a little bit more than you would think. So, like the other day, it was in the mid 20s here, but it was snowing a little bit, so the humidity actually, with no wind, you're standing outside, it really isn't that bad. So, I don't know if that sounds rational or valid to any of you. If you think that's a complete garbage rationalization on my part, please tweet Jacob and I and Pulse of the Pack at our new handle with the hashtag garbage theory. But my short answer, Jacob, I'm doing well. Ready? I'm ready to talk some Packers. I'm ready to talk some NFL conference championships.
Well, I am definitely all in on that garbage theory because I don't believe that it's ever cold in Arizona. But I've also lived in Illinois and Wisconsin my whole life, so cold is kind of what we do around here. Before we get going on championship weekend, I do want to start by thanking our sponsors real quick, Mark Mayfield Sports and Waukesha Sports. They have an event coming the 24th of April. Sir Charles Woodson, one of my favorite players, is doing an autograph signing. And I'm very excited about it because I am going to attempt to attend myself. I'm still working out some logistics on things that could be going on that weekend. But overall, trying to get to that event. So those of you that want information and stuff, I'll try and find the link for you and tweet it out from our Twitter account, at Packer Pulse. Waukesha Sports, doing a signing with Charles Woodson, very exciting. It's something they did around the weekend of, actually it was on the weekend, of Brett Favre's Packers Hall of Fame induction. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to make that due to time constraints, so hopefully this time around I'll be able to do it. I've met Charles Woodson once before. Was a little starstruck, so I'm hoping this time around it will be a little bit better experience and maybe he won't think I'm the creepy fan this time around, even though that's what's likely to happen. Jason, anything to add about the Charles Woodson signing?
Yeah, this is not a common occurrence. This is, you know, one of those things, obviously, he's going to go into the Hall of Fame when he's eligible. This was his last season. We had a chance to see him play against the Packers, which, you know, you never want to see a good player that is near and dear to your heart tearing your team apart. Didn't mean to make that rhyme, but it did that time. But this is a big deal. Charles Woodson doing the signing, and this is just a good another testament to our sponsors, Mayfield Sports Marketing and Waukesha Sports. They really do put on some really good events. They do a lot of really good charity work during the holidays. So good work to them getting Charles Woodson. It's obviously going to be a nice draw for Packers fans that want to wish him well. And I want to reiterate to everybody to had this conversation several times over the past couple of weeks. Jacob, I know this is kind of a hot button topic for you too. Charles Woodson is not going into the Hall of Fame as a Raider, and he's not going into the Hall of Fame as a Packer. Football players just simply go into the Hall of Fame. They don't go in with any specific team. So for those of you who want him to retire as a Packer, in your mind and in your heart, he's a Packer. And Raiders fans, in their minds and in their hearts, he can be a Raider. And you know what? Everybody wins. But great stuff. Good stuff by our sponsors.
And to me, he is a Green Bay Packer, and there is no debate about this. He is also a Michigan Wolverine, which is important really just to me only. Absolutely agree with that. There's really nothing to disagree with. It's kind of confusing because of the way baseball does it. You know, they have the cap that they get in, which, by the way, I am also a little disappointed that Ken Griffey Jr. is not going in with his Hall of Fame cap on backward, just because that represents my childhood in such a way. But I digress. Last week, I also told you guys that we were doing the last of our game balls and our plays of the game. I have one more to give out. I told you guys last week that my grandpa was battling cancer and took a turn toward the downside of things. So I wanted to give out one more game ball here and one more play of the game because last Wednesday my grandpa went home. So I wanted to give him the last game ball of the season because he fought the good fight, he kept the faith, and he finished the race. I'll miss you, Grandpa Mike, wherever you're at. I know you're listening to me from somewhere. The play of the game I want to give you is one story I want to tell real quick. When I was younger, my grandpa was a Bears fan, and he used to make bets with me all the time, and it was gentleman's bets, but as we got older, he kind of taught me the value of the point spread, because one year the Packers were playing on Thanksgiving against the Lions. Mike McMahon was the quarterback. The Packers were pretty good, and the Lions were terrible. And I was like 13 or something. I was a teenager at the time, and I was pretty cocky about it. I told him the Packers were going to win by a bunch of points, and he said, okay, I'll make a bet. If the Packers win, you give me Detroit. He said, you give me Detroit, and you give me 10 points. And if the Packers win by more than 10, I think he said he was going to take me to the driving range or to lunch or something like that. But if the Packers didn't cover the spread, I had to wash his truck. And my grandpa had a gigantic truck at the time. I can't remember the make or model. I'm not a gearhead like some others are. But he taught me the value of the point spread because the Packers actually ended up losing that game. And even if they had won, I would not have covered the spread. And I realized that day that 10 points is a lot for a point spread. So my last game ball and last play of the game of the season is also my grandpa's last game ball and last play of the game for the season. So thanks for the support you guys have given me over time, for those of you that knew about this and things of that nature. But this is a football show, and I'm not going to turn it into a sob fest. I want to talk about football because this is a football show. And we're actually going to start around the league. Yesterday was Championship Sunday. the New England Patriots took on the Denver Broncos, Peyton Manning against Tom Brady, in case you haven't heard, they played against each other a couple times in their careers. And Cam Newton's Carolina Panthers took on the Arizona Cardinals. I'm sure you guys heard the Cardinals were playing in that game because that's who ended the Packers season a week ago. So what I want to start with is just a small breakdown. And, Jason, I know we kind of talked about who we picked. I was 1-1 yesterday, but I want to know, you know, after the Packers are eliminated, I tend to hitch my wagon to a team, so to speak, to root for the rest of the way. And sometimes that deals with friends I have that are fans of certain teams, unless that team happens to be like the Minnesota Vikings or the Dallas Cowboys or a team that I'll never root for. I tend to root for that team. So for those of you wondering, the rest of the way, my team going in to as soon as the Packers were eliminated is the Denver Broncos. And that has to do with the fact that a couple of my good friends are Broncos fans and my mom is a huge Peyton Manning fan. And I'm a Peyton Manning fan as well. I really appreciate his career, even if he's not the same. So yesterday's AFC game is where I'm going to start. Really a great game, actually an instant classic by all standards. They talked about the quarterback duel. Yesterday was really a duel of two defenses, I thought. The Broncos, I thought, missed some opportunities because of the age of Manning throwing the football and not putting it in spots he normally would. They missed a couple opportunities to score some touchdowns. But that Denver pass rush made Tom Brady, who I've said numerous times, in my opinion, is the greatest quarterback I've ever seen, look like a mere mortal. And he wasn't good yesterday. He was hit 20 times. He was sacked a bunch of times. Von Miller was an absolute terror. DeMarcus Ware was very good as well. Malik Jackson, Derek Wolfe, those guys played well also. The Denver defense completely neutralized the Patriots offense, which I wondered if that was going to be possible because of the Patriots' quick passing game, but they took that away for the most part. Patriots were 2-for-15 on third downs. On the top of my head, I believe they were 2-for-4 on fourth downs, and both of those conversions came on the last drive of the game where they scored a touchdown and then subsequently missed the two-point conversion. But I was happy with the AFC results for reasons I've mentioned. And even though I do respect Tom Brady, that doesn't mean I like the Patriots. And, you know, the Patriots are a team that's won a lot, so they teams that win a lot tend to be disliked quite a bit. Being a fan of the New York Yankees, I know that very well. I understand it, and I'm fine with it. So I'm okay with the Patriots losing. Jason, talk about the AFC game and then kind of transition us to the NFC side of things.
Well, the AFC game, anytime it's Brady versus Manning, you're excited about the matchup. So we got what we wanted in that situation. It was in Denver. So because, you know, it always seems to be in New England, and the Patriots have had a lot of success. And, you know, all I seem to have heard all week long while everybody was talking about who they wanted to win this game was, well, I think I'd rather – and most people wanted Denver because they were so tired of New England's persistent success over and over and over again. I'm like, well, you know, it's funny because Packers fans really always point to New England as the gold standard when they talk about teams that constantly get deep into the playoffs, and Packers fans wish they were playing in conference championships. I mean, that was the fourth year in a row that the Patriots have been in a conference championship game. So that's impressive. Absolutely impressive. Now, they've lost three of those last four, by the way. So when we talk about a little bit later, we talk about team success and Packers success and whether or not they're really set up to go deep into the playoffs and they're really a successful franchise or not, then, you know, we can discuss that at that point. You know, it's tough to win playoff games. And remember, there's only one team that's going to be left standing at the end. But I thought it was well played, and it was a nice back and forth. Denver's defense really came to play. It's always fun when you see teams have to deal with an element that they don't really deal with a lot of during the season. I thought that was the pressure that was on Tom Brady. I mean, he's not mobile. He actually ran for a first down. I saw Brady moving, and I thought to myself, you know, I'm no spring chicken anymore in terms of athlete years, but Tom Brady has definitely got to be one guy I think I could definitely outrun even with the pads on. So he ended up running for a first down. You don't see that very often. He was under pressure a lot, was rushing his throws, you know, just having to get rid of it, just some ugly passes from him. Denver's defense had a great scheme. As much as it pains me, I have to credit Wade Phillips, Denver's defensive coordinator, for a great game plan. And a good friend of mine is actually one of their college scouting directors for the Broncos, and so I'm happy for him, send him a congratulatory message earlier today. He actually used to work for the Patriots with the Broncos now. He's doing a really great job out there. So, you know, I'm always happy to see. Either way, you know, I like Tom Brady for you know, his play on the field and his intensity. I like Peyton Manning just because I've always been a Manning fan. I was more so when he was with the Colts. Now he's with the Broncos. It's a little different. And then after he shattered the Packers season with one single amazing game earlier this year, I had to find it in my heart to be happy for him. But, you know, I think this is setting up a nice little Super Bowl matchup for us. So I like that game. We had all of its drama. It came down to the end. The Patriots had a chance to tie it up. Denver made a nice play. New England wasn't able to get it done. You know, it was pretty fun to watch. Gronkowski, you know, I said, you got to go to Gronk here. On the, I think it was the, had to have been the touchdown. So you got to go to Gronk because he's your best receiver, and they just didn't, you know, they were down so many guys dropping left and right. It was a very physical game, and, you know, everything that needed to happened for it to be as dramatic as it was. So that was a fun one to watch. But in my mind, and for all the wrong reasons, obviously, I say, because I talk about reasons why you root for and root against the team, and you can't really tell somebody how to be a fan. But being from the Phoenix area, I have run into my fair share, more than my fair share, of Cardinals fans, Arizona Cardinals games, Arizona Cardinals news coverage. I was there when they beat the Packers down in week 16, and then I had to listen to all the Cardinals fans say, "Go home, Packers fans. You wasted your money coming out here to see your team get boat raced. You know, go away." And then I hear the stories about how some of the fans were acting at the game. Now, I realize Packers fans are no saints either. If you follow Doug Schneider on Twitter, you hear all the scanner squawk and about the ejections from Lambeau Field on game day as well. But for me, this weekend was all about the Cardinals-Panthers game. I was looking forward to that one. And you know, as we look at and talk about the way that game went, it might not necessarily, by virtue of the score, been as entertaining to watch to some. But for me and my sanity's sake, I enjoyed every cotton-picking minute of that game. Absolutely 100% had no problem with the lopsided nature of it. I wanted Carolina to win that game. And, Jacob, I'll let you take it from here, but I think it's pretty safe to say that Carolina won that game.
Oh, absolutely. Carolina, I said before, I believe I said it on last week's show, I know I said it in stuff I've written since that time, Carolina has to be the most disrespected 15-1 team ever, because the team goes 15-1. They have home field advantage in the playoffs. Last week they're playing the sixth seed, albeit I respect the Seattle Seahawks and their championship pedigree and all that sort of stuff, but they were playing a 10-6 football team, and it seemed like nobody was giving Carolina a chance to win that game. And then even going into last night, I get people wondering, you know, is Carolina even legit? I don't understand how it's happening. I think we have the preseason idea stuck in our head of, well, okay, they don't have Kelvin Benjamin, so they don't have a lot of weapons. But I hate to break it to you guys, because I know a lot of people don't like him, and I know a lot of people don't like his antics and all that other stuff. Cam Newton is a stud, and he is far and away this year the league's most valuable player. I don't think the vote will be particularly close. I thought he played very well last night, save for one interception that he threw, which is going to happen. You know, Cam doesn't have the accuracy of, say, Tom Brady or something like that, but he played very well last night. I thought he was emotionally charged. He channeled his emotions into the right direction, and that defense kicked the crap out of Carson Palmer. They hit him. They sacked him. They caught the interceptions, which Sam Shields, Packers defensive backs, take note. You know, if you catch interceptions, good things happen. Because Carson threw two picks last week against Green Bay, which very easily could have been four or five if Sam Shields can hang on to a ball that is thrown to him. So those are a couple examples of that. Last night he turned the ball over six times, four picks, two fumbles. He looked nervous, and that's really the best way I can explain it. Like, the moment was just too big for him. Not to play into cliches, because Carolina, I do think, is a better team. But Carson Palmer did not play well, and I think Carolina was far and away the best team in the NFC this year, and I think that showed last night. So the Super Bowl is the Carolina Panthers and Cam Newton against the Denver Broncos, that defense, and Peyton Manning. It should be a great matchup, I think. You know, a lot of people are pointing to the similarities of this year's Panthers team to the Seahawks team that demolished that Broncos team a couple years ago. This Broncos team is different than that. This team's defense can actually hang with an offense like that. They couldn't back then. They didn't have Von Miller in that game because he tore his ACL in December that season, so he didn't even get to play in the Super Bowl that year. The Panthers' defense is very good. I think that they can do some things that, you know, will give a really a bad Denver offense some fits. But we'll talk more about the Super Bowl in next week's show leading up to the big game, because there still is 2 weeks between the Super Bowl and yesterday's games, obviously. So I was happy with both results. I like Cam Newton. I don't have a problem with the way he acts or conducts himself. I think that it's a game. It's fun. And I don't think he really does anything to show up the other team more often than not. And realistically, if you think Cam Newton is going over the line with some celebration stuff, chances are there's probably a player on your team that most other people think goes over the line with the celebration stuff. Hell, a lot of people from other fan bases think Aaron Rodgers is cocky. And I do too. But, you know, when you play the game's most important position and you're one of the league's best players at that position, there's an old, and I'm going to probably make some of you guys shake your head with this, but there's an old Kid Rock lyric. And, you know, it's from the song Cocky, and it says, "It's not bragging if you back it up." And I'm paraphrasing because there's a couple words in there that I've omitted for radio sake. But I agree. It's not bragging if you back it up. Then it just is what it is. Cam Newton is one of the best players in football this season. He's going to be the league MVP. And he's got a really good chance to win a Super Bowl and become the MVP of that game as well. So, all in all, instant classic in the AFC game, beat down in the NFC game. I do feel bad a little bit for Larry Fitzgerald because I think he deserves a Super Bowl ring. But overall, I was rooting for Carolina last night. I wanted them to win. I'm rooting for Denver in the Super Bowl, as I mentioned. We'll talk more about that stuff as it goes into Super Bowl week next week. So look forward to our Super Bowl preview show next week. Something new we're doing. We told you guys last week about our new Twitter handle, @PackerPulse. Earlier this week, we sent out some tweets asking for questions that we would answer on air. So with that in mind, we're actually going to go into the Q&A segment of this show based on our Twitter account. Also a tease for a little bit later in the show. I'm sure you guys have all read by now. Bob McGay wrote a story about the Packers. Jason Hirschhorn is coming on our show. He's going to talk about that. When he calls in, we will let you know, and we will discuss that piece in detail. But for now, we're going to do questions and answers. The first question I'm going to give out is from a guy that you guys are probably familiar with. His name is Ross Uglum of From the Benches. Jason, we've discussed this before, but he asks, pick one to return. DJ Raji or LaTroy Guyon? Those of you guys probably already know by now that Raji and Guyon are both slated to be unrestricted free agents when the new league year begins. Both players were brought back on one-year deals. Guyon was looked at as somebody that they could give a multi-year deal to last season before his legal troubles in the offseason. Pretty much wasted his entire market out, and the Packers were able to get him for a one-year deal. DJ Raji was drafted in the same draft as Clay Matthews, 9th overall. He signed a one-year deal two off-seasons ago now, tore his biceps in preseason, came back, signed another one-year deal to try and prove his worth and re-sign. So, Jason, I'll let you start on this. DJ Raji or LaTroy Guyon, and why?
Okay, well, perfect that you would ask such a hot and burning question, because the answer to that question is going to have to wait, because we are now fortunate to be joined live on the line by I'll call him a friend. We'll let Jason decide whether or not he agrees with that assessment there. But I want to welcome onto the show, so gracious for coming on with us, Jason Hirschhorn of Acme Packing Company, who recently penned a piece about some of the reaction and some thoughts about some of Bob McGinn's writings in the assessment of Packers general manager Ted Thompson, the relationship between Thompson and head coach Mike McCarthy. Jason of Southern California, how are you doing, sir? And thanks so much for coming on today.
Well, I'm happy to come on whenever, Jason, or Perone, or Upbeat Lollipop. I'm not really sure what you go by these days.
Yes, I was actually going to give you a good segue, but you beat me to it, so let's roll with it. Absolutely. So, Jason, before we get started, and obviously Jacob's on the line here too, let everybody know, just give them a quick rundown of where they can find your work. I mentioned Acme Packing Company, and then also how they can find you on social media.
Well, yeah, as you guys mentioned, I write for Acme Packing Company, and I write for SBNation.com. You can also find my work at sportsonearth.com. On social media, I am found on Twitter at @by_JBH. I make it as easy as possible for you since nobody can spell my last name. Did I miss anything, Pro?
I don't think so. As a matter of fact, I realized I've been leaving the C out of your last name for a long time, so I had to go through all of my phones and all of my emails and contacts and update it, but you're good, and I spelled it right on Twitter, on the tweeter, so I think we're okay. So without it, I know your time comes at a premium. You're a busy guy, and I want to, you know, obviously also the great 2D podcast that you do with Peter Bukowski is fantastic. If you guys out there aren't subscribed to it or listening to it, definitely do. Now, Jason, are you guys going to continue to do that during the off season, or is that going to go on hiatus for a while?
Oh, we don't have live, so yes, we're absolutely going to continue doing that throughout the off season.
Got it. Well, yeah. Well, if you're looking for lives, you've come to the wrong place here as well. So I think we're three peas in a pod here today, right now. So without any further ado, Jason, I mentioned the Bob McGinn piece, and there's been a lot of reaction to that amongst Packers fans and in Packer Nation. And you know, one of the things that when the Packers lose, and anytime they lose for the season, season's over with, you get a lot of adverse fan reactions. There's a lot of revisionist history. You know, there's a lot of people looking back and kind of, you know, in hindsight wanting to question whether or not the Packers should have gone for two, or, you know, why did they have Jake Ryan on the field? Why didn't they draft this guy? Why didn't they take that guy? Man, they could have had this or that free agent on the cheap. You know, why they've got all this cap space. Why can't they make a splash and, you know, get after a guy on day one of free agency? And so that's been largely the reaction from Packer Nation. You made some good points, and I think maybe fans just need a little reminder that Ted Thompson does kind of get busy in free agency. He just goes about it in a little bit of a different way. And I wanted you to kind of maybe address some of those points that you made in your piece there, just to kind of remind everybody that Ted Thompson has not been sitting on his hands. He's made some moves and actually kind of helped put this team in position to do well and hopefully as well this upcoming offseason.
Well, I'll start off with this. It's not that Ted Thompson or Mike McCarthy are beyond criticism, and I don't think that the idea that those people should be held accountable for things is bad. At the same time, I don't think the methodology that they use by and large is the wrong one. And you really need to look no further than this the previous decade before Thompson and McCarthy got there, when Mike Sherman was running both the coaching staff and the front office. You know, they did make more of those splashes, Joe Johnson being the perfect example. And when those things don't work, not only does your roster get the immediate hit of a player that doesn't really fit in, but you also lose that cap flexibility down the line. And that's how, you know, a Mike Wall leaves a free agency or a Marco Rivera, and how your roster can really deteriorate. I mean, if the early 2000s Packers had been run financially the way that Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy have operated in the time since they got there, it might have been a totally different operation. I mean, they might have been able to really extend that period with Brett Favre and those teams beyond 2004, which was the last time they made the playoffs for a couple of years until 2007, when they made it back under Thompson and McCarthy. So when you're looking at these teams, though, they definitely have made some splashes. They just aren't the kind of splashes I think most fans demand. You know, Julius Peppers was probably the biggest splash we've seen Ted Thompson make since, you know, Charles Woodson, you know, earlier in the decade. But that was a different situation than most of these free agents. He was released by the Bears, which meant that he wasn't going to count against the compensatory pick calculation, which is becoming even more of a thing now because, if you recall, these picks are now going to be tradable starting, I believe, next season. So you want to get as many of those as possible. He also signed LaTroy Guyon, who when B.J. Roddy went down, I know you guys were just discussing him, became a very valuable commodity. He was really able to stabilize the center of that defense. You know, he doesn't do these things very often, and maybe the criticism should be that he needs to do some of those smaller moves more often to plug in those holes. I mean, we saw with the Packers this year, inside linebacker, for the most part, was an issue outside of Clay Matthews. Maybe had they signed someone like Mason Foster, that being the example that Bob McGinn uses in his article, you know, a minimum contract guy that can come in and at least play adequately, maybe that really stabilizes the defense more so than it already was. You know, those things aren't going to just destroy your cap structure, but they are going to pad your roster. I think maybe that's the area where Thompson could adjust, and maybe we will see him adjust later on this offseason.
Jason, Jake Westendorf here, and first of all, I feel like I need to apologize because I've known who you are for so many years and found out today that I just recently started following you on Twitter, so I have no idea how that happened, but my apologies for that. Welcome to the show. We appreciate having you on here. One thing that I kind of wrote down some key points from the story that I got out of McGinn, just kind of wondered some thoughts on it from both Jasons, really, but since you're the guest, I will ask you first. You know, he mentions how, you know, it wasn't just the front office he discussed. He discussed the head coach situation as well. He was talking about how, you know, the playing time structure of, you know, Nate Palmer was a starter for 11 games before Jake Ryan became the full-time starter. Why did that take so long? Why was Devontae Adams on the field for so long and never an opportunity given to Jared Aberderis or Jeff Janis, for example, as the names he mentioned in there as well? Why was Eddie Lacy continued to kind of be having his hand held? He would get punished for a game or, you know, kind of get lost in the shuffle for one game or things of that nature. He basically said, you know, accountability is not as important as a player's feelings being hurt, apparently, according to the way that Mike McCarthy runs things out there. And then eventually says, with the way that McCarthy runs the show or ran the show this year, it would be hard to trust his judgment now and going forward. Do you think that's a fair assessment? Because, you know, I know that reporter, you know, it's very easy to say something along the lines of, you know, this player deserves some playing time, and Jeff Janis has 7 catches for 145 yards and 2 touchdowns in a playoff game. I understand that. But reality is, was it just one game? Or did that kind of prove a larger issue of that maybe McCarthy is, as some have stated in the past, loyal to a fault?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, so I will try to do it piecemeal, and then if I miss anything, just throw it back at me. Let's start with some of those players you mentioned. You know, why was Nate Palmer starting ahead of Jake Ryan early in the season? We have to consider a lot of factors here. Number one, Nate Palmer had been with that defense for several years. Jake Ryan, a rookie coming out of college. There's a very good chance that Ryan was not ready and Palmer struggled for a handful of games. It doesn't mean that Ryan was the right answer then. They did eventually move to him, so I think that actually indicates that they were watching his progression, and once he passed the point where they could trust him, they were happy to put him on the field. We'll jump to a different example. We talked about the receivers. Jeff Janis, Jared Aberderis, the ones you mentioned, having very good games in that final playoff game, and the question was whether or not those guys should have been playing more and ahead of Devontae Adams. So we have to consider a lot of factors there as well. Jeff Janis, as great of a game as he had, and we were definitely going to remember those two huge catches on that final Packers drive for a long time. It's not like Jeff Janis didn't make mistakes in that very game that cost them points. If you remember, on one of the Packers drives where they had to settle for a field goal, Janis is supposed to run an out route towards the corner, and Rodgers was going to hit him, and he was wide open. It should have been 7 points right there. But Janis went a little too flat, the ball sailed over him, and they had to settle for a Mason Crosby field goal. Those kind of mistakes are why Jeff Janis probably was not playing more often during the season. Now, it doesn't mean that he shouldn't have played more than he was, but let's point out that it's not like he is a fully developed product. Remember, he's coming off of his second season, and he's coming out of Division II football. It's a little different. It makes a little bit more sense that maybe his snap count on offense was restricted and that we might see more of him in the future. Aberderis, different version of the same thing, that being, you know, he wasn't even on the active roster until, I believe, week 3 is when they brought him on. I believe for that 49ers game, they activated him. And he still, you know, he was dealing with some issues. He wasn't entirely healthy. And finally, when he got healthy, they did start to use him more, and then it was back and forth. You have to remember, though, Devontae Adams was a second-round pick, and he's very, very young. He's only 23 years old today. He played very poorly. They definitely should have considered playing him less for some of the other receivers. But it does make sense they might have looked at this from a long-term perspective. If Devontae Adams, you know, gets some of these rough patches out now, maybe he develops into a better receiver down the line. I mean, we saw this with other receivers in the past. James Jones struggled a lot his first couple of seasons, but because they stayed with him, he became a very serviceable receiver and actually was their top receiver this year. So maybe that's what they're hoping for with Devontae Adams.
Okay, so when we talk about the development of these guys and them taking a step forward, because that's obviously what the Packers count on with this, relying on their younger guys to contribute sooner. You had Jake Ryan playing this year. You had, obviously, Demaryius Randle, Quentin Rollins, who should have been playing. They actually earned their way onto the field very nicely and developed nicely for rookies. I think they did a lot, even for a first and second round pick. I think they played at least up to those expectations. The other debate within the debate that's gone on over the past couple of days is how close is this roster, how close is this team to getting over the hump, getting to another conference championship game, winning a conference championship game, and making a Super Bowl appearance. Now, obviously, a lot of things have to happen for teams to win a game. It's not just simply about putting the best roster out there, and they tabulate the rankings on who's got the best roster and the game is not played. So there's obviously a lot of things that can happen and change those factors. But, you know, when you look at things like Ted Thompson, what he does to build the actual talent pool around the team itself, and then you've got Mike McCarthy, who is coaching this team and kind of creating the culture in the locker room. One of the questions I have is Mike McCarthy getting the most out of these guys at the most key times, like the biggest games of the season? Is that one of the reasons why Sam Shields drops the football versus doesn't drop a football? That's why some teams win and some teams lose. Now, I know Shields was coming back off of a massive concussion, and there was probably some cobwebs in there, and he hadn't played in over a month, and so you kind of have to wonder if that wasn't a factor. But my question to you, Jason, is, in your estimation, how close is this team, or are they already going to come back next year and kind of have the same expectations that they had going into this year? I think that's what a lot of Packers fans want to know is how much do we need to do in this offseason to get past in Arizona or to get to that next step, because, darn it, we want to win another Super Bowl.
Well, I'll answer the second part of that first. They definitely have the reasonable expectation of competing for a title next season. I mean, they're going to be healthy. Jordy Nelson is going to be back. You presume that they're going to do some things to add to that offense as well, either through the draft or maybe through free agency. And, you know, with a little bit of luck in terms of staying healthy, they are going to have that opportunity. Now, you also asked, is Mike McCarthy getting the most out of these players? And my answer to that would be, I think if you're looking at his entire tenure, the answer is usually yes. But this season, the answer was no. And, I mean, Sam Shields dropping interceptions, I mean, that's something that you just have to live with Sam Shields. That's why he came into Miami as a receiver and left a quarterback. But there were definitely times when you saw players who should have been doing something differently or should have been doing something better that he wasn't. I just think that was a problem for them this entire season, especially after those injuries just decimated the offensive line. I mean, Don Barkley probably never should have been playing at left tackle, but even when he was playing at other positions, he wasn't performing as well as he should. He said the same thing about Josh Walker. I think that you saw those issues throughout the roster this year. I wouldn't say that that's a reason for overall concern, but it is what doomed them in 2015.
Jason, we were talking about the roster and things of that nature. One other thing, and it was kind of a damning quote, for lack of a better term, from McGinn, but he basically said, you know, Ted Thompson runs his operation like a glorified college scouting director. And I don't know if that's 100% fair, because we kind of talked about free agency and such earlier, things of that nature. I guess my question is, you know, do you think the criticism of Ted Thompson is fair at this stage? Because, you know, yesterday was probably terrible timing, considering the time the article came out, or really good timing in McGinn's case, terrible timing for Ted Thompson, because Owen Daniels was in Green Bay for a visit, and the Packers did not sign him, and he was the only Broncos player yesterday that scored a touchdown. He scored two touchdown passes from Peyton Manning. There's an example of a guy the Packers had in Green Bay, had a chance to sign, chose not to, and the tight end position this year, at least in my estimation, I don't know if you feel differently, was absolutely abysmal. Richard Rodgers kind of is what he is. I don't know how different Owen Daniels would have made things, but if nothing else, he gives Rodgers a veteran safety blanket just in case Richard Rodgers doesn't make that leap that they were hoping for. Or, you know, there is an injury setback like what they had with Andrew Corliss throughout the course of the season. They don't have to bring on journeyman tight end types like Justin Perillo or keep a prospect on there that was really inactive for most of the season like Kennard Backman was. So my question through all that diatribe was, is the discussion of Thompson being a college scouting director fair? Because you did mention some free agency acquisitions that he has made. However, This is a, he was hired in 2005, and you mentioned, what, four players, if you include Ryan Pickett, to the three that you mentioned earlier, so four players that they really signed, and all of them have really panned out. Do you think it's fair to say that Ted Thompson could do maybe a smidge more and not be draft and develop only?
Well, I think it's certainly fair to wonder whether or not he should or whether he could. I don't think that's something that is, like, beyond the pale for discussion. At the same time, I think in terms of McGinn's article, this is speculative on my part, but when he says a glorified director of college scouting versus, you know, general manager, I think what he's really saying is Ted Thompson is not being more like Ron Wolf. And it's not like Ron Wolf didn't make his own mistakes, but he was one of the most successful general managers in modern NFL history. Ron Wolf would both spend a lot of time trying to cultivate the draft, getting extra picks, finding value in the later rounds the way that Thompson does, but also add things in free agency. Now, you know, everyone points to Reggie White, but that's far from his only major acquisition, or was his major acquisition when he was running the Packers. Ted Thompson's biggest ones have been Charles Woodson and Julius Peppers, if we've already discussed, but there haven't really been that many outside of them, and you listed off a couple of others. So I don't think that that's necessarily a fair statement in the way that it was worded, because it's just a different style. I mean, you could also go the complete opposite direction, spend almost all of your resources in free agency, and that wouldn't be successful either. Thompson has a strategy that maximizes their window. That's why the Packers have had seven consecutive playoff berths. That's why McCarthy has eight playoff berths in 10 years. Like, that's the strategy that works for them. Because once you're in the playoffs, their view is anything is possible. You know, maybe in the playoffs they've had some losses that have made fans wonder whether or not this is the correct strategy for the team. And I don't think that's totally unfair, but at the same time, there are not a lot of teams with this level of success. I mean, you're talking about the Patriots who've been this consistent. The Seahawks appear like they're going to have that kind of consistency going forward. And these are all teams that have won a championship. And if you want to look at it from a different perspective, the last eight Super Bowls, counting the one that we're going to have in 2 weeks, we will have had a different champion every single time. So the fact that the Packers have gotten one and not more, I don't think it's really a damning statement. I think it's really a compliment to how well they've run their operation.
And I think that's a good perspective to keep on, and is that, you know, and I say all the time, and it's very oversimplified, but it's true. I have yet to see a team win a Super Bowl that did not first make the playoffs. So you get into the tournament, anything is possible. And as we've seen over the past decade, we've seen a lot of teams come up from the ranks and pull a lot of surprises in the postseason. Although this year we got one versus one. So, you know, there goes that theory out the window, but my last question is kind of a two-parter, Jason, and then we'll let you go. And thanks again for coming on before I forget. The first one is obviously everybody's going to want to know what the biggest need for this team is, you know, whether it be draft or free agent in terms of position. You know, is it defensive line? Is it linebacker? You know, what do you see as the biggest need for this team? And then in terms of the relationship between Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson, we are not privy to their conversations. We're obviously not in their office while they're chatting. But after reading and kind of taking all of this in, what is your take on the current state of the relationship of those two guys?
All right, well, let's start with the roster. The hardest part about this question is we do not know who is going to be back and who is going to leave for free agency. I assume right now that Casey Hayward is going to depart because of all of that extra cornerback depth that they brought in the last draft and in undrafted free agency. I'm less sure, though, whether B.J. Roger, LaTroy Guyon is going to come back, whether Mike Neal or Nick Perry is going to come back. If those guys depart, I mean, that creates huge holes on your defense, especially in the middle, because, you know, LaTroy Guyon and B.J. Roger did a pretty admirable job over the course of the last 2 years manning that middle. Without them, it is a totally different defense. I don't know that you can just put in someone like Mike Snell in there and just hope that it stabilizes. I think really you either need to bring one of those guys back or find a replacement in the draft, because I think it's pretty unlikely that someone of that quality is going to be there in free agency other than the guys that you are potentially letting depart. So based on, I don't know, a couple of assumptions, I think that most of their needs are going to be on the defensive end. One of them, I think, is one that a lot of fans also suspect is going to be a primary need, and that's inside linebacker. And it's not just because it means getting Clay Matthews more snaps on the outside. Clay Matthews, for as good of an athlete as he is, still is not a great coverage linebacker. And they really lacked that this year. They haven't really had a guy who's capable of doing that since, I think, maybe like Brandon Chiller. We're already talking about over 5 years ago. Maybe getting a guy like that, you know, the safety linebacker hybrid, which seems like it's Sua Cravens from USC. someone like that might be able to come in and really stabilize that part of the defense, both in terms of getting Matthews to the outside more full-time and also just having a little more coverage so you don't have, you know, Micah Hyde guarding every tight end known to man. You can do some more interesting things. The defensive line, I think, is going to get a reinforcement, even if B.J. Raji and or LaTroy Guyon come back, as both those guys are advancing in age. And it wouldn't surprise me on the offensive end if you see a pass catcher selected within the first three rounds. You know, Jordy Nelson, is even if he comes back as good as he was when he had that injury, he's going to be 31. You do not know how much longer he's going to be able to play at a high level. Devontae Adams, as we already discussed, had a really disappointing season. Maybe he recovers, maybe he doesn't. You can't just assume that he's going to figure it out. That leaves Ty Montgomery, who had kind of a six-game audition. You don't really know exactly what you have there yet. And then it leaves Jared Aberderis, Jeff Janis, guys who at this point, even if they're going to be NFL players on offense, may not be starters. So bringing another receiver, I think, is certainly an option in rounds two and three. And if one's available, maybe a, you know, an athletic pass-catching tight end. I think a lot of people would see that as a big need for that offense. You know, Richard Rodgers, as I think Jacob mentioned, he does some things very well. He might have the best hands on the team. He has the body to be a good blocker if he hasn't done it consistently yet. But he's not going to stretch the field. He's certainly not going to force the defense to adjust to him in the middle. Having a tight end, you know, it doesn't have to be JerMichael Finley, but someone with those kind of skills or some of those skills could really change the way that offense operates. Because when we saw for most of the season, especially with Jordy Nelson out, it was really hard for the Packers to pass over the middle because they didn't have a pass catcher capable of just, you know, making the defense gravitate towards them or being able to beat them, whatever. Getting someone who could do that, I think, would be a huge thing for that offense.
Awesome. Jason, as always, excellent thoughts, good insights on the Packers and some of Bob McGinn's thoughts. And with regards to this team, there's obviously going to be way too much time on all of our hands. Like you said, none of us have lives, so all we're going to do is dissect the dissection of everything that was said, has been said, and will be said. But draft season's upcoming. Looking forward to more of your great work over at Acme Pecking Company, which is part of SB Nation. You can follow Jason on Twitter at @by_JBH. And Jason, I would love to have you back at some point, so don't be too surprised if I come begging and pleading once again for you to come on and impart your wisdom on our fabulous show. Thank you so much again for coming on. I appreciate it.
For you, I'll be lollipop anytime.
Thank you, and that's right. And for those of you who aren't aware, Jason created this moniker for me in my game day Twitter persona, which, of course, goes away after game day, and I become a rational, normal human being. But between Jason and I, we are going to market and turn this into a huge thing, if not this year, then next year. So, Jason, royalties coming your way for sure. Don't worry, I won't forget you.
That's good to know.
All right, man, take care. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, take care, guys.
That was Jason Hirschhorn of Acme Packing Company talking about that Bob McGinn wrote, and I know that we cut off our question-and-answer segment. We will get back to that. But, Jason, I do want to go over really one question that I thought was the most interesting. Obviously, this is starting to gain some traction. I'm reading about it. I was listening to it on Chicago Sports Radio today about how Mike McCarthy is fed up with Ted Thompson's lack of willingness to address the roster with some veterans. I thought his postseason press conference was interesting. For that reason, he mentioned big targets in the middle of the field, whether that's a tight end. He mentioned the position explicitly. He mentioned needs at the inside linebacker spot because he said he wanted to move Matthews back outside, but said they moved him inside out of necessity, things of that nature. Jason, the question I have based on all that is, what do you make of the presumption that Ted Thompson is, or the report, I should say, it's not a presumption, the report that McCarthy is, quote, fed up with Thompson's ways?
Well, my first thought is it's because we don't get a lot of insight from the Packers in terms of what happens behind closed doors. They're very good about keeping all that stuff in-house, and then the players and coaches give you the coach speak when they're behind the microphone. So I hear something like this come out to me. It just seems like a lot of rumor. But because of some of the sources and those involved, you know, Bob McGinn, for as much heat as he takes for his very realistic takes on the Packers and as much shade as he's thrown at the team, quote-unquote, by some fans this past season, you kind of have to take into consideration that he's not going to put something out there if there isn't at least a little bit of truth to it. So I don't know how valid it is, but I think where there's smoke, there's fire. And I do think that Mike McCarthy realizes that, you know, if he's going to accomplish something what he wants to accomplish as the Packers coach at this point. He's already got one championship, but the expectation is that he's going to get another one before Aaron Rodgers' time is up in Green Bay. And we're not in any kind of dire straits here. I mean, Rodgers has more years to play, barring injury. Obviously, we don't know what the future holds, but the expectation is that we're going to have a few more years of Aaron Rodgers at his peak, and then you've got a lot of these young players that hopefully the team can retain and count on to be a big part of the offense and the defense and give this team a chance to get into the playoffs each year. So I do think that we're starting to get to the point where it's, you know, first it was 1, 2, 3 years removed from 2010. Now we're 6 years removed. We're 6 years after the fact, and the Packers have made the playoffs every single season, but they've gone out in ways that leave you wondering if they left something on the field. Like I said, when I asked Jason, is this team capable of getting to a championship? Because they're not making the plays that winning teams make, and that the, you know, look at the Carolina Panthers and the Denver Broncos and what got them to this championship. They got to the, when they got to the quarterback, they finished and got him to the ground. When there was an interception to be had, it was caught, it was reeled in, they made the play, they caught the ball. Those are the kind of things that Green Bay has just not done. I mean, they had so many chances against Arizona. We don't even need to talk about last year's NFC Championship game. The year before against the San Francisco 49ers, you had Micah Hyde, who is not a receiver, but drops an interception that could have really helped the Packers in that particular game pull off a big upset. Winning teams that are going to do special things make those plays. I think Mike McCarthy is realizing, hey, my window is starting to shorten here, and if some of these guys start to fade out, and as soon as Aaron Rodgers is out of the equation, you know, Mike McCarthy essentially has to start over, you know, depending on what the Packers do at quarterback. So, yeah, I think he's frustrated. I think he's sensing the urgency here. He doesn't want to go out a chump in Green Bay, and that's really harsh word to say, but that's kind of the vibe that you get online and on social media towards the Packers. Woulda, shoulda, coulda. It's all of this frustration of what the team didn't do. It's they're not talking about what they did do, and even fans now, and this is what really blows me away, is that we were treated to two miraculous plays that either tied or won big games for this team. You think about it, at the time the Packers were playing the Lions, had they lost that game, their season was probably in the tank. You know, they would have been lucky to get a wild card. They probably wouldn't have made the playoffs at all. They needed that in the worst way. So that was a huge, huge play at that time. And then obviously in a divisional playoff game, nothing gets bigger than doing that in the postseason and giving the team a chance to, you know, to go into overtime. So, and tie and go into overtime. So, you know, but, you know, fans sit there and say, well, you know, they got lucky, they had Hail Marys. You know, listen, I've only seen one Packers team in the 30 years that I've followed this team that from start to finish of a season had it going on from day one all the way to the end and left me very little question that they were going to win a championship. And that was the 1996 Green Bay Packers. And even during that season, they had a couple of injuries and they lost a couple of games that had everybody wondering if they were going to pull it off. Reggie White had a hamstring injury. Mark Chamora hurt his foot and you weren't sure what was going to happen. And then, you know, they brought in, they lost Robert Brooks. They brought in Andre Rison, and they did a couple things that saved the season. But in 2010, that was a pleasant surprise. And some of these other seasons, pleasant surprise. So I think Mike McCarthy realizes, hey, it's the insanity thing, Jacob, like we've talked about. You know, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. I think Mike McCarthy's like, hey, you know what? It would be nice if we did do a couple different things. Maybe make one splash, bring in one big guy. You know, fill a need here where we don't have to count on the draft and a maybe for a kid coming out of college that may or may not pan out. And then fill in your usual success stories that Thompson usually adds during the offseason. So that's my take on it. I don't think it's as bad as everybody thinks it is, but I do think there's something there.
Well, it's like that old saying, during any team atmosphere, you're never as good or as bad as you think you are. One thing I also want to add, and the reason I think maybe the frustration, I do think the frustration exists, and one thing I also want to add is, remember, this is really the first year since Aaron Rodgers became Aaron Rodgers, you know, league MVP, things of that nature, 2009-ish area, where the Packers have struggled without the built-in excuse of, well, our quarterback has a broken collarbone. Because you remember, they finished 8-7-1 two seasons ago and made the playoffs. But at the same time, during that season, Aaron Rodgers missed eight games with a broken collarbone.
So that kind of puts a damper on that season as a whole anyways. It's really a miracle they were able to make the playoffs in that season because of how everything turned out. I understand it was a great season. It's one of my favorite Packers teams in recent memory because of how that season played out, ended. It was a dramatic finish in Chicago, obviously, which is big for me being from where I'm from. But this is the first year that they've struggled with theoretically all hands on deck, or at least, you know, Aaron Rodgers wasn't hurt. While other guys around him may have been, the big guy wasn't. You know, the man, as Vic Ketchman likes to call him at Packers.com, the quarterback wasn't on the bench. So I think that led to some of the frustration. And I do think that, you know, I've said for years, you know, I'm not asking Ted Thompson to go out and sign Von Miller. I'm not asking him to go out and sign last year in Ndamukong Suh, someone of that nature. I'm just asking for a little bit of help to where we're not hoping on Jake Ryan to be a fourth-round gem and become a really good starting inside linebacker for a team that hopes to compete for a Super Bowl. Jason Hirschhorn mentioned Mason Foster. That was a name that I had tagged down last year as a guy that maybe Green Bay should be in the market for. Turns out they weren't, and he signed for very minimal money. This year I've mentioned it. The big spot that I'm looking and hoping for a free agent for is the tight end position. I mentioned Richard Rodgers. He is what he is. Got good hands, does some things well. He's a big body red zone target, and that's good as your number two tight end. But in today's NFL with the passing offense, and I think Mike McCarthy said it without saying it, you need someone that has some dynamic ability to stretch the middle of the field. And there are guys available in free agency and guys that could be available in free agency, and I'm pretty much talking about Martellus Bennett from Chicago when I say that, that could help the Packers at the tight end position next year right away. The draft class, I've talked about it. It's weak. Guys that we were potentially looking at with that skill set, Jake Budd at Michigan, O.J. Howard at Alabama, Jordan Leggett at Clemson, all three of those guys went back to school. So I think McCarthy even kind of sees some of the writing on the wall, so to speak, that if the Packers are going to improve at some of the positions they need improvement at, they're going to need some outside guys to come in to the organization and offer them some things. Now, by no means do I think Ted Thompson has done a poor job. I think that he gets kind of a bad rap around here. And I wonder if some of the criticisms would exist about Ron Wolf if the social media and such existed back then. Because as much as we glorify Ron Wolf, and believe me, he deserves it 100%. He's a Hall of Famer. He restored Title Town. I get all that. Ted Thompson and Ron Wolf have the same amount of Super Bowls to their resume as the Packers general manager, one apiece. So I don't think that this is a failure by any stretch, but I also, in 2010, after the glow of the Super Bowl came down, sort of had the fear of, we have two Hall of Fame quarterbacks now in the last 20 years or so, maybe longer, depending on when Rodgers' career ends. Two Hall of Fame quarterbacks, two Super Bowl titles. That's not enough. To be fair, though, you watched yesterday, the New England Patriots are the gold standard. You know, four Super Bowl titles in the Bill Belichick and Tom Brady era. They went 9 years between their third and fourth Super Bowl title. They lost two Super Bowls along the way. They lost another AFC Championship game yesterday against what, in my estimation, was an inferior team. I think that the Patriots are a better team than the Broncos, and they did not beat them. So is that a failure as well? I'm not so sure. I think that there's a lot that Bob McGinnis said, and again, Jason, I agree with you. I don't think that he would have said those things if there wasn't some value to them, but I also don't think that everything is necessarily 100% true. That's the Bob McGinn story. We will discuss more of it next week because we do want to get to your guys' questions as promised. Jason, the one that we had before Mr. Hirschhorn came on our show, thanks to him once again, was Raji or Guyon. To me, I think that really depends on the market because I was talking about this with some people. I don't know how big LaTroy Guyon's market is going to be because he has his legal issues that we've discussed, and he didn't exactly put up big numbers this season. However, there was a number that Bill Huber from Packer Report tweeted out earlier. It was that when on the field, opponents averaged 0.61 yards less per carry with Guyon on the field and 0.49 less yards per carry with Raji on the field. That's not a huge difference, but it's enough for me to wonder, like, if B.J. Raji is going to get a lot of money, and I use that term relatively because I don't know what his market is going to look like when the offseason begins, but if Raji's going to get a lot of money and the difference between Guyon and Raji is significant enough, I think Raji is a better player, but I don't think those numbers are significant enough to justify paying him an extra $4 to $5 million than you're going to pay LaTroy Guyon, for example, because that could be the difference in being able to keep Mike Neal, Nick Perry, Casey Hayward, if they decide to go that route, keep another player. So you basically could get, at least in my estimation as of right now, two players for the price of one if you opt to go that route. But all things being equal, I want Raji back, even though it sounded like I was giving a sales pitch for Guyon there. So I would take Raji. I think he's a better player. And I think if the money's relatively close, you got to bring him back. I do still think it's possible that they bring both back, but that's something we'll have to monitor as it goes forward. Jason, you have a pretty strong opinion on this. What is it?
Okay, so one thing I want to say about your statistics, because numbers are good to have, obviously, to illustrate the value of a player. And last year, LaTroy Guyon really made an impact and was a good thing for this defense. He was a free agent, He was an unrestricted free agent. And the Packers signed him, so there you go. Add him to the list of guys that Ted Thompson has brought in that he hit on, because, you know, Guyon was a hit last year. But his snap count this year, and he missed the first three games because of the suspension, so he obviously, you know, wasn't in the game for that, and Raji played a full season. But his snap count was significantly, well, I shouldn't say significantly because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was lower than Raji. So when you give me an average and you show me that Guyon, you know, that offenses ran less for less yardage per carry or you know, on average when Guyon was out there, I'm not necessarily as enamored with that number, you know, towards the argument towards LaTroy Guyon. The other issue that I have, and we talked about this, and I know it was an isolated incident, was he got into some trouble last offseason. And then there was the Michael Cohen article, which was factual about some domestic issues that Guyon had faced even prior to the gun and drug issues that he had last offseason. So there seems to be this element of trouble that kind of follows Guyon around every once in a while and pops up. And so the risk with him, when you're comparing he and Raji right off the bat, is Guyon has missed time because of things that happened off of the football field. And that's not something that you want from your contributors and that you want from your veterans. B.J. Raji's missed some time due to injury, but he's stayed out of trouble, and he's obviously not dealt with some of those particular problems. So with Raji, at least you know you got a guy that is going to be able to play a full season for you and is probably not going to do something stupid. I would say you go for Raji, but you have to be smart about it. You know, you can't, like you said, you know, I wouldn't want Raji back at the expense of both Nick Perry and Mike Neal departing, because I definitely want at least one of those two guys back, and I think we're probably going to talk about them next or if not next week or soon. You go for Raji first and foremost. He's been in the offense longer. I think he's got a little bit more to give. I think he's got a better long-term prognosis, and when I say long-term, you know, I just mean from now to the end of his career. You know, Jason mentioned they're getting up there in age. They're not old, but, you know, they're definitely not, you know, spry youth anymore. So you've got to be smart about what you're going to throw at Raji, because like you said, Jacob, you could get two for one if he doesn't work out or if he becomes too expensive. There isn't a big market for Guyon. You get Guyon back, plus you get a Neal or a Perry. I'm okay with that. It's unfortunate that Raji has to go, but he's also – now played on 2 1-year prove-it deals, and he wasn't even able to get one of those or get a long-term deal out of it because he lost the entire 2014 season due to injury. So I would go with Raji, but definitely try to get after Guyon. I think there's a good chance that they're able to bring them both back. The Packers do a pretty good job of retaining talent. Last year, maybe an exception with both Devon House and Tremont Williams departing, but I think that they'll make a play there for – I think they'd like to have them both back. But, you know, Ted Thompson's going to do his usual thing. He's going to set his market. He's going to set his price. He's going to draw the line in the sand. And there you have it. But to me, it's 91st and then 98, but would love to see them both back in green and yellow.
There you have it. We're hoping for both. If we have to choose, it's Raji pending money. Next question. Also, thank you, Ross, for that question. Glad to hear you're listening to the show. Next question comes from Kent Carlisle, and I apologize, Kent, if I'm butchering your name, but he asks, will Ted Thompson stay the draft and develop course,
or dive in the free agent market? It's going to sound like I'm not really giving you an answer. However, this is my answer. Ted Thompson's not – you're not going to hear the Packers listed as a suitor for Von Miller or Josh Norman or insert your massive free agent here. However, I do think that there is something there is something to this idea that McCarthy is frustrated, and I think that Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson trust each other for the most part. So maybe Ted Thompson needs some advice. Maybe I'm doing some wishful thinking, but I've mentioned numerous times in the short lifespan that the offseason has had that the tight end class in the draft is not very good. The free agency tight end class has potential to be very good. Ladarius Green is available. Antonio Gates is available, albeit a little bit older. Wayne Allen, Kobe Fleener. Maybe the Bears release Martellus Bennett. And that's the drum I am going to bang. Martellus Bennett, because he fits the idea of what Ted Thompson goes for in a free agent. He won't count against compensatory picks because the Bears are likely to release him. For those of you that don't know, the Bears put him on injured reserve in the middle of the season with a ribs injury, but most people in this area, Chicago sports media and such, have pretty much accepted the fact that the Bears have done that because they're tired of Martellus Bennett. They're tired of his attitude and things of that nature. Now, I won't pretend that those character issues, they'll call them, don't matter. But I think Bennett would be an excellent addition to this offense. He never gets brought down by first contact. That little drag route that Richard Rodgers runs all the time for 2 yards, Bennett gets 7 or 8 on that. Stretches the middle of the field. Good red zone target, albeit his touchdown numbers weren't very high the last couple of years, but they also had Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey as big red zone targets for Jay Cutler to throw to. I think if you can get Bennett on a 2 or 3 year deal, that he would be an excellent addition to this team. I think that he could look to potentially fill a linebacker. If he loses some of his outside linebackers, he could bring in an outside linebacker. He could look to give some competition to Sam Barrington and Jake Ryan as the inside linebackers, not just count on a rookie to do that. So I think that there's some potential that he dives into the free agent market, but if you're asking for a free agent splash, Von Miller, Josh Norman, someone of that caliber, that's not going to happen because that's not the way the Packers conduct business. Their big money deal that they signed this offseason, they just gave to Mike Daniels, and I'm fine with that. But I do think that this could be a year that Ted Thompson goes for a free agent out of really necessity. Jason, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to kind of hedge my answer here because I do think it's going to be both. And when I say free agency, I mean every aspect of free agency. So roll your eyes. But he's going to bring in undrafted guys. He's going to bring in his draft guys. And so he is going to use free agency. I do think that, you know, we don't know what kind of efforts Thompson has made to acquire players. You know, I was listening to Green and Gold today a couple days ago, and Wilde and Bill Johnson were talking about how they were actually able to get some intel out of John Schneider when they spoke with him recently about the deal that the Packers nearly had done for Marshawn Lynch back in 2010. They tried to get Lynch. They tried to trade for him. They weren't able to do it because Seattle – and I didn't know this, but apparently Seattle wanted A.J. Hawk thrown into the deal. And so Green Bay just wasn't willing to pay that price for what Seattle wanted. It's not like, and I kind of laugh because I've seen some names thrown around, and they're pretty big names and guys that the Packers would have to spend a lot of money on. Derek Johnson's one of them. It's not like Ted Thompson is all of a sudden just going to flip a switch and rip off his suit and tie and have a Superman outfit on underneath. He's going to do what he's going to do. The Packers have cap space, but they also, when they find a guy that they really like, a young player that they really like, that they want to keep, that's where they spend their money. You look at Aaron Rodgers, look at Jordy Nelson, you look at Clay Matthews. You've got some guys coming up that, you know, the team is going to have to make some decisions on. I mean, we're quite a ways away from Demarius Randall, but, you know, he's eventually going to be a guy the Packers are going to need some money for. You know, you've got Eddie Lacy coming up here. Eddie Lacy is going to be a huge debate as to whether or not the Packers are going to want to re-sign him. If they're going to bring him back, they're going to have to pay and shell out. So you're not going to see this. You know, everybody says win now mentality, go all in. Well, you go all in and you don't get it done. Like Jason said earlier, you're in cap hell, and now you're not viable for the next couple of years. So I think it's going to be largely the draft. I think that, you know, Thompson's counting on his two compensatory picks to add to the stable of other picks that he's going to have. I certainly wouldn't put it past him to package some picks and move up. I don't necessarily know that he moves up in the first round, although there's a guy that I like that we're going to talk about in another show that I think would be worth putting something together for and really moving up in the first round on Ted Thompson, like further than Ted typically would. Little teaser there, and we'll talk about that on another show. So I think it's largely going to be stay the course, and it might be a very frustrating thing for Packers fans to endure because they saw this team regress, quote unquote, from going to a conference championship game to then getting knocked out in the divisional round. But it's hard to argue with the overall success of this team and this regime. I mean, at this point right now, if you compare year for year, with the amount of time that Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson have been here, both Ron Wolf and Mike Holmgren were out the door by this time. They were gone. So these guys have been together and doing it for as long as they have, and they're right up there with your New England Patriot gold standard in terms of how many years they've made the playoffs and playoff appearances. I get that New England's been to the Super Bowls, but they lost a couple. And so, you know, it's great to get to a championship game, and this is, you know, going in a completely different direction, Jacob. But, I mean, I'd rather not go to a Super Bowl than go to a Super Bowl and lose. And I think that sounds like a, you know, loser's mentality or a convenient thing to say. And then there's the whole debate about whether you would rather lose a heartbreaker or get blown out, which was today's green and gold today. Today being Monday's green and gold today's topic. I don't know. I think the Packers just stay the course largely and do what you do, because if you start getting cute and doing things that you don't do, it's kind of like in playoff games when all of a sudden you start calling plays that your offense doesn't normally run and defensive schemes that your team doesn't normally do, even if they're practiced, the results usually aren't that great. You got to stick with what you do well, and that's what I think the Packers are largely going to do. But I won't be surprised if they surprise us all. I mean, I think there's a lot of conversations that are being had, and you saw a couple coaching changes. So obviously the team is starting to think in a different direction in some way, shape, or form. It's just a matter of what they're going to actually do.
Absolutely, it's a matter of what they're actually going to do. And one point that you made, and one final point I want to make before we sign off, is you mentioned if you go all in and you don't get it, now you're in cap hell and you're not relevant. For those of you guys that want to wonder what that looks like, check out the Denver Broncos this offseason. Their cap space is to a point where they may not be able to bring back Von Miller. And that is, as you saw yesterday, the best player on their defense. They may not be able to bring him back, and if they do bring him back, it'll be at the cost of three or four other guys. And that includes quarterback Brock Osweiler. The Denver Broncos are going to have an incredibly interesting offseason this year. That's an example of going all in and potentially not even getting a Super Bowl out of it. Obviously, they've been to one. They got blown out by the Seahawks. They're in another one against the Carolina Panthers. They're not favored in that game. Panthers are 5-point favorites in the line that came out today. That'll obviously move a lot in the next 2 weeks or so. But the Broncos are one of those teams that went all in, and it may not turn out to be worth it. So we'll see what the Packers do this offseason. I think it'll be interesting. But I do think that there's some value in the idea that McCarthy's frustrated, and that may lead to some different things. Thank you guys for sending in your questions. We will do this as often as we can in the offseason. Send us your questions at Packer Pulse. But we've run out of time for today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. Again, follow the show on Twitter. We are brand new on Twitter, at Packer Pulse. We actually have had a lot of interaction with you guys on Twitter so far. One of our main interactors, we're actually going to try and get him on a future show. So if you're listening, we're in the works on it. We're just trying to figure out a way to fit you in. So we didn't forget about you. But if you guys interact with us quite a bit, there's a chance that that could happen. If you guys want to come on the show, we'll have a segment for you. We'll discuss it with you guys. Get fan perspective, listener perspective. As we said, our goal in this offseason was to remind all of you, the listeners, on why we do this show. So follow that show on Twitter, at Packer Pulse. Send us questions. Send us comments and concerns. Obviously, you know, I write about the Packers three to four times a week. I try to tweet out all that stuff on the Twitter page. You can send opinions back on that. Jason's full of opinions, so you can follow him. He's at Jason Perrone. Send him questions. We'll take them, obviously, through our individual Twitter accounts as well. The best way to reach both of us is through the Pulse account, at Packer Pulse. You can follow me personally. I am at Jacob Westendorf. Next week,
We'll have another show. It'll be the Super Bowl preview show. We'll talk draft. We'll talk off season. We'll talk free agency. Preview the combine. Talk about some of the stuff we're going to do now that football season is almost over, which reminds me, one final thing, and it's kind of quick, the flatline moment of the week, which we talked last week, was last night after the Carolina game, because you realize yesterday was the last day where there are multiple football games on in a day. So we're at an exciting time of the year, but it's also bittersweet because of that. So flatline moment of the week, post-Carolina-Arizona game, because it was the last multiple game day of the season. Again, follow the show, follow us. We gave out those Twitter accounts. Thank you to Jason Hirschhorn for joining the show. We appreciate your guys' time. Thank you, as always, for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice. Hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.